All right, I know what you guys are thinking as I walk up here. You're like, this guy has reoccurring dreams. And if that's what you were thinking, you were right. I do. Does anyone else have reoccurring dreams that are just weird and crazy and things like that? So I have this reoccurring dream that I got fired from this job that I worked for. And it just gives me this sinking feeling every time I think about it. But maybe the craziest reoccurring dream that I have is that I'm in a musical, okay? So I can't sing. I'm obviously too awkward to dance, right? I've heard that there's people in this room who do impressions of me walking out onto the stage because I have kind of an awkward walk. So I can't dance, and I can't sing. But apparently, I dream of being like a Broadway star of some kind, right? So the dream goes like this. I try out for my high school musical, and I get the part. And I get the script, right? And I'm so nervous in my dream because I've got to memorize the script. And then, oh yeah, I've got to sing. I've got to memorize the songs. But here's the hilarious part about my dream. Every single time, I kill it. I knock it out of the park, right? I do awesome, right? And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself in my dream, I am going to do this for the rest of my life. This is my calling, right? And then I wake up, and my heart's like beating hard. And my heart's beating hard in my dream because I just killed it. But my heart's beating hard when I wake up, because that would be like the most exposing thing to me ever, to have to dance and sing and memorize a whole bunch of lines in front of people. And I think all of us have this fear, right, of being exposed in some kind of way. We're like, man, anything but this. For some of you, what I'm doing right now is your worst nightmare, right? You're like, if I had to talk in front of people for 30 to 35 minutes, I would be so scared. I would leave. I would not do that, right? And for others of you, it's something else. Maybe it's heights or something like that. You're just terrified of being exposed in this certain situation, right? But think about this. Think about how much worse it would be to be exposed for the sin that you're hiding in your life. Right? It's one thing to be exposed in sort of an embarrassing and funny way, like a YouTube sensation sort of way. It's another thing to be embarrassed or to be exposed in like that area of your life, that sin that you're not telling anybody about. That thing that you want to hide that you do on the weekends and then you come here during the week. Right? Just imagine if everybody here knew that right now. Right? And so the first half of our big idea might not sound like a good thing to you. But what we're going to talk about tonight is how actually when God is the one who exposes our sin, it's a great thing. Because it shows us our brokenness and our need for His grace. So that's the big idea. It's that when our sin is finally exposed for what it is, we can see our need for grace. It's actually the best thing ever when your sin just gets out there for God to know, because then you need Him and you find that He's all that you've ever needed. So again, we're continuing through this crazy book of Hosea, right? It's really hard to find, and it's a crazy story. Nobody could have made this up. And the first thing we're going to see as we start through chapter 2 is that God exposes our sin for what it is. So if you remember in chapter 1, we meet this guy named Hosea. And God comes to Hosea, and He's like, I want you to marry a prostitute. And Hosea is crazy enough to actually do it. So he marries this prostitute, and then we find out that they have 3 kids. And the first kid is Hosea and his wife Gomer's child. But the second two, we see it's sort of implied in the text, but it's not really clear that the second two children are not really his. And so we're left with this question, is she already committing adultery on him, or is she being faithful to him? Well, what was implied in chapter 1 is now exposed in chapter 2. We see that Gomer and the people that she represents, which is this nation of Israel, and Hosea represents God, and God's got this crazy love for this crazy people, and he wants to show it in this vivid picture for us with Hosea, this prophet's love for this prostitute, right? And so the first thing he has to do is expose exactly what his people are doing. So chapter 2, starting with verse 5, says this. We're going to read through verse 13. It says, "For their mother has played the whore. She who conceived them has acted shamefully. For she said, 'I will go after my lovers who give me my bread and my water, my wool and my flax, my oil and my drink. Therefore I will hedge up her way with thorns, and I will build a wall against her so that she cannot find her paths. She shall pursue her lovers but not overtake them, and she shall seek them but shall not find them. Then she shall say, "I will go and return to my first husband, for it was better for me then than now." And she did not know that it was I who gave her the grain, the wine, and the oil, and who lavished on her silver and gold, which they used for bail. Therefore, I will take back my grain in its time and my wine in its season, and I will take away my wool and my flax, which were there to cover her nakedness. Now I will uncover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and no one shall rescue her out of my hand. And I will put an end to all her mirth, her feasts, her new moons, her Sabbaths, and all her appointed feasts. And I will lay waste her vines and her fig trees, of which she said, 'These are my wages, which my lovers have given me.' I will make them a forest, and the beasts of the field shall devour them. And I will punish her for the feast days of the Baals, when she burned offerings to them and adorned herself with her ring and her jewelry, and went after her lovers and forgot me, declares the Lord." So this is what's happening. Hosea has married this woman, and she's just gone crazy. She's left the house, and she's having one night stand after one night stand with all these different guys. And she begins to think that they have been the ones who provided her with everything that she's ever needed. But the clothes on her back and the food that she's eaten has all been provided her by Hosea. And she continues to run around on him until her luck sort of runs out. And she realizes, in having sex with all these different guys, that they're not actually going to provide for her. They were just looking to get some, not to actually love her. And so what she does is she runs back to her husband. But she doesn't run back to her husband because she loves him, because her heart is fully committed to him. And she's actually turning back and saying, "I love you again." That's not what's happening. She's going back to him because she wants some more stuff from him. She's going back to him because she wants some wine and some grain and some oil, really expensive things in those days. She wants some gold and some silver. And then she wants to go back out after she's gotten her fill and continue to prostitute herself. And God says, that's exactly what my people are doing. They're cheating on me. They're running around on me. You see, I provided everything that they could ever need, and here's how they've treated me. They've given credit to this idol whose name is Baal, and they've sacrificed their children to Baal. And they've bowed the knee to him. And they've had these ceremonies around his temples. And they've made images of him. And they have forgotten about me. So do you know what God says? He says, I am going to expose my wife's sin. I'm going to show how awful what she is doing is. He says he's going to take all the pleasure out of it. It's not going to be fun anymore. And this wife who once had everything that she could ever want is now literally going to be left lying naked in the street without any clothes. He's going to leave her there so she can feel the effects of her sin. He's going to expose her sin to her. Has your sin ever been exposed? Has God ever left you in a place where sin isn't satisfying you anymore? The one-night stands aren't exhilarating anymore. The drunkenness just leaves you with the hangover in the morning. Like, and you wake up and you just are like, what am I doing? You're just exposed. Guys, I remember the time in my life where I probably felt most exposed by my sin. It was just after I had graduated from college. And in late college, I was really struggling with pornography, and I was in it sometimes. I was repenting of it sometimes. I just had a porn addiction. And I remember coming to this conclusion at one point that just totally sickened me. I remember thinking to myself, I love watching porn. And I was just like, what the heck? In the same mind, I say, I love Jesus, and I also say, I love watching porn. And so, as I was struggling with this, I met my wife, Melissa, and we started dating. And 2 weeks into our relationship, I confessed to her that I had had this struggle with looking at porn. I didn't want to have any secrets. And I'll never forget, as our relationship went on, she wrote me this email. And I remember her just saying, Drew, like, as we start looking towards marriage and stuff like that, like, you have to understand this is an incredibly hard pill for me to swallow. That in your mind and heart, that you have had sex with hundreds of other women. That's what you've done. And I remember reading that email and just weeping. Just dagger in my heart, just weeping as my sin was exposed for what it really was. It had left me empty. It had never come through for me. Those images, those women that I was looking at, never fulfilled any desire in my heart. It was ridiculousness. They were providing nothing for me. No real love, no real companionship, nothing that I was really looking for. And then I remember months later, Melissa and I were engaged. And we're sending out wedding invitations. And I just remember, as I'm thinking about my history with porn, and I hadn't looked at it in maybe a year at this point, months, something like that. And I just remember, just in the middle of sending out these invitations, just falling down in front of her and just crying my eyes out. And just being like, I can't believe I did this to you. Became personal. I forgot about God, and I forgot about this relationship that he was going to bless me with. in Melissa. And so God graciously exposed my sin to me so that I could come to a point of brokenness. And he was willing to tell me through those circumstances, you've forgotten about me. You see how relational that is? He's not like, you've broken all my rules. You're not supposed to do that. Why are you so ridiculous? When you're sinning, the heart of God is, you forgot about me. You forgot about how much I love you. And I want relationship with you. You see, guys, happiness is an illusion apart from this relationship with God. So he can't let us continue down the path that we're on. He has to expose our sin. So if you're in a place today where you came here and you were hesitant to even come because you're broken, I'm telling you, you're in the right place. Because here's the good news. It's that God speaks to us in our brokenness. So think about that vivid imagery. There's this prostitute and she has kept going back to all these different men. And they've treated her horribly. And she's left. She's laying just naked in the street. And that's what it's like for all of us, exposed in our sin. And this is God's response. He says, therefore, behold, I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness and speak tenderly to her. And there I will give her vineyards and make the valley of Achor a door of hope. And there she shall answer as in the days of her youth, as at the time when she came out of the land of Egypt. And in that day, declares the Lord, you will call me my husband, and no longer will you call me my Baal. For I will remove the names of the Baals from her mouth, and they shall be remembered by no name anymore. And I will make for them a covenant on that day with the beasts of the field, the birds of the heavens, and the creeping things of the ground. And I will abolish the bow, the sword, and war from the land. And I will make you lie down in safety. You see, when Israel, this nation who's totally turned their back on God, comes to this point of brokenness over their sin, God says, I'm going to allure her. It almost means seduce her. I'm going to speak tenderly to her. I'm going to say, you can come back home. He says, I'm going to turn the valley of Achor into a door of hope. The valley of Achor is this place where this guy named Achan's sin was exposed in the book of Joshua. And God says, this place that would bring shame on this nation, I'm going to actually turn that place into my front door that you can walk into, right into my house. He's saying, you feel exposed, you come back to a relationship with me, I'm not only going to treat you right, I'm going to treat you with compassion and kindness. I'm going to speak in such a way that you can hear it, and then it will heal your broken heart. Ladies, especially, isn't this what you're longing for? You're longing for your dad to speak tenderly to you. To just tell you with gentleness that he loves you. And so you've been going from guy to guy to guy to guy, looking for that guy who will finally treasure your heart and not just want you for your body. And I'm asking you to consider that this is the guy. It's the God of the universe. And he just wants to tell you, he's telling you, actually, if you'll listen right now, I love you. This is exactly where you are supposed to be. The reason that you walked through the doors of Salt Company tonight is not mainly because you chose to come. It's because God was pursuing you and he wanted you here to hear this message. Guys, sometimes I like to speak tenderly to my wife, you know? And I like to allure her. But it's hilarious when you have kids because it's just a lot harder to get your mojo on, you know? So what I do is we're sitting at the kitchen table and, you know, I almost said something that I shouldn't. And we'll be sitting at the kitchen table and, you know, my kids are all sitting around and there's like, you know, we got some Michael Bublé playing or something during dinner. And so I just love just like, hey, Melissa, would you like to have this dance? Which there's always a kid screaming in these moments, right? And so you just ignore that. And so we'll just be standing in the kitchen dancing in front of our kids. And my son Luke, for some reason, especially hates it. So if he's standing up, he'll actually try to get in between us. And he'll say, I want in. I want to get in. And I'm like, this is a moment just for me and your mom. And I just pull her closer, you know. And it's especially fun to just start having a conversation with her and just telling her, man, I love you so much. And can you believe this life God's given us? And the kids are screaming and in the background, stop! We want some food! And I'm just like, and then I just take it to the extreme, right? I'll dip her down and kiss her. Which is, and then Luke will be like, I want kisses, I want, and I'm like, you don't want these kind of kisses, buddy. And, but it's in the middle of the craziness of life, right? Like, I mean, stuff is flying everywhere, and I just want to take these moments to just let Melissa know that even though we've got four kids, that she's still the one that I love the most. That my eyes are for her. And I just want to tell her that as much as I possibly can. And I'm telling you guys, in the middle of the craziness of your life, if you'll listen, God will have tender words for you. He'll just talk to you. You can have that type of relationship with him where he just talks to you and you talk to him. And more often than not, what he's going to affirm is just that he loves you, enjoys being in relationship with you, that when he sees you, he delights in you. He actually enjoys being with you. That's what this thing is all about for God. It's not about the Israelites breaking the rules. It's not about you breaking the rules. It's not some code of conduct or some morality that he's trying to hold over our heads. The issue is, he just wants to know us. Isn't that crazy? He wants you, the deepest part of you, even in your brokenness. So God exposes our sin for what it is. He speaks to us in our brokenness, and then he does something that's totally insane. He begins to change us deep inside. God changes us deep inside. Let's finish out the chapter. Hosea 2, 19 through 23 says this. And I will betroth you to me forever. I will betroth you to me in righteousness and in justice, in steadfast love and in mercy. I will betroth you to me in faithfulness, and you shall know the Lord. And in that day I will answer, declares the Lord. I will answer the heavens, and they shall answer the earth, and the earth shall answer the grain, the wine, and the oil. And they shall answer Jezreel, and I will sow her for myself in the land, and I will have mercy on no mercy, and I will say to not my people, you are my people, and he shall say, you are my God. So let me explain this Middle Eastern concept of betrothal to you. So God says, I will betroth you to myself. I will betroth you to me forever. And you're like, It's not hitting home. I don't know what that means, right? Well, we have this concept of engagement in our culture. And all of us understand that engagement is not quite marriage, but you can get out of it, right? If you end up thinking that person that you're engaged to is a creep, you can take the ring off. And it's over, right? It's a loose commitment, all right? It's serious, but it's not as serious as being married. You don't get divorced when you're engaged. In the Middle East at this time, betrothal was a serious commitment, okay? In fact, when Mary gets pregnant, in the New Testament with Jesus, and Joseph's like, who's the daddy? And she's like, it's God. He's like, oh, okay, yeah, right. And it says in the text that he sought to divorce her quietly, even though they weren't married yet. They were betrothed to one another. So you had to get a divorce to end even a betrothal. And so it was this period of intense commitment where basically the price was being paid by the husband to make the marriage official. The bride price was being paid. So the dealings were basically being done between the future husband and the future wife's family. So it's this commitment. And so you see what God's saying. God's saying, I want to have a relationship with you that never ends. I want to be in a relationship with you that never stops forever. Not just in this life, but for eternity. That's the type of relationship I want to have with you. Here's the crazy thing about this passage, though. Notice what he says. He says, I will betroth you to me in faithfulness. And he says, righteousness and justice and steadfast love and mercy. Okay? So this is what God's saying. He's saying, I'm going to be committed to what's right in this relationship forever. Justice. I'm going to be the type of person that protects you and punishes evil when it comes near you. Steadfast love. His love's never going to stop. He's always going to be pursuing you and loving you. He's going to be compassionate toward your brokenness. He's going to care for you even when you're hurting. And then he's going to be faithful. He's actually going to keep his promises. He's not going to be like so many guys who a better offer comes along and he's going to walk out the door. He's actually going to be faithful to you. But here's where it gets crazy. Then he says, and you shall know the Lord. Okay, let me tell you why this is crazy. As a college pastor, I've done a few weddings, right? So it's always a fun part of the ceremony to officiate the vows, right? So some people like pre-written vows. Some people like to do vows off the cuff. Some people have a crinkled piece of paper in their pocket. That's always cute when they pull it out and read it, right? And because the guy's the leader in the family, I always have the guy go first. And he reads his vows. And he's basically telling this woman who he's marrying that he is going to be faithful to her. He's telling her what he has committed to her. And then after he tells her what he's committed to her, she responds and tells him what she's committed to him. And usually what I'll say is, you've got to keep your end of the bargain even if they don't keep their end of the bargain. That's what you're saying. I'm going to do this whether you do this or not. So can you imagine if you went to a wedding and only the guy said vows? And then the pastor's like, all right, sweet, I pronounce you husband and wife. You can kiss the bride. You're like, she didn't say anything. What is going on here? Okay, here's the crazy thing about this passage. Only one person says vows. Do you notice that? God says, I will betroth myself to you in faithfulness, justice, righteousness, mercy, all these things. I'm going to keep up my end of the bargain. And then he says, and you shall know the Lord. But that's one of God's vows. So you understand what he's saying? He's saying he is powerful enough to guarantee that you'll keep your end of the bargain. So he's the only one who vows anything. Do you know what he's talking about here? He's talking about the cross. You guys know what the cross is all about? It's where Jesus says, I'll take on all of your sin. I'll expose myself completely naked on a cross in front of everybody. And I'll display what your sin deserves. I'll be exposed for you. Because of my mercy. Because of my faithfulness. Because I've promised that I'll not only keep my end of the bargain, I'm also going to keep your end of the bargain. So you see, the cross makes it possible for you to be in relationship with God without doing anything. All you have to do is believe. You believe that Jesus was exposed for your sin, that he died in your place, that God's promises are true, and now that he's put his Spirit in you, and the Holy Spirit knows the Lord. He knows the Lord in you. So you don't have to try really hard to have this relationship with God and to know him, because God's even going to do that in your life. Give you desire for him. See, guys, that's the amazing thing about God, is he's so powerful and he's so loving and he's so good that he'll even keep up your end of the relationship when you fail. We can trust him. So let's just bow our heads before this great, awesome, loving God. And let's just ask him to talk to us. We do a lot of talking in prayer. And I think some of us right now, we just need to hear from him. We just need to hear that he loves us, and that even though we've failed, he has come through for us on our behalf so that we can still have this relationship with him. We can still know him. God, we just are humbled tonight. We thank you for this crazy message in the book of Hosea, your never-stopping love that pursues us down to the bottom of our brokenness, and that you actually change us from the inside out. You do for us what we could never do for ourselves. God, we're attentive to you this week. Just ask that you would just continue to affirm your love to each of us as we walk through our week. In Jesus' name, amen.